Good afternoon, and welcome to the Econews Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson, Director of Friends of the Eel River. The Econews Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU, brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Econews. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Over the course of the last century or so, the American West has gone from being the scene of a veritable frenzy of dam building to actually beginning to dismantle and remove some of those dams, some that have done grave harm to fisheries, river ecosystems, and the human and natural communities that depend on them. Yet these questions remain no less contentious today than they were 50 years ago. In some ways, it appears our political leaders want to go back to building big dams. They've just passed a bill designed to allow and fund two new dams here in California. But at the same time, the impacts of dams on the Snake River, the Klamath, and Eel Rivers has never been clearer. And the fight is really on to get destructive dams out of some of our most important Western rivers. Joining me today in the KHSU studios is Craig Tucker. Craig is the natural resources policy advocate for the Karuk tribe and a longtime participant in the Klamath Dam removal process. He's here today to talk in part about the hearings that will be held, including January 12th in Arcata, on the latest round of proposals to remove four of the Klamath dams. Welcome back to KHSU.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for all your work. Why don't we start, Craig, by just talking about where the Klamath Dam removal process is now and what part these hearings play in that?
Well, in a lot of ways, things are, I have to say, on track. You know, for years, we've been trying to find a path forward on dam removal. We had negotiated a complicated agreement that involved dam owner PacifiCorps, irrigators in the upper basin, tribes on the river, conservation groups, etc., only to have Congress leave us standing at the altar. And without congressional authorization, the deals couldn't move forward. But PacifiCorps remained interested in dam removal for a variety of reasons we can talk about. So we restructured the dam removal agreement to simply go back through the what is a more normal process through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. So what we've done is created a nonprofit entity called the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. PacifiCorps will transfer the lower four dams to this Klamath River Renewal Corporation, and then the nonprofit will oversee the removal. And the proposal to transfer the dams and decommission them has been sent to FERC for consideration. So things are really on track to remove the dams. The removal date continues to be 2020. And so we got to move through this FERC process. So in a lot of ways, a lot of the hard work that a lot of folks have done together over the years is starting to bear fruit. Although now we have to contend with a new problem, and that may be the Trump administration, whose views on this issue is really unknown to us.
Right. So what's at issue in the hearings January 12th in Arcata and across the state through the month of January?
Well, just like if you want to build a dam or any kind of project that affects water quality, you have to demonstrate compliance with the Federal Clean Water Act and get a permit. It's called a 401 permit, and that's the section of the Clean Water Act it describes. So the dam removal requires a Clean Water Act permit, and so these are hearings by the Water Board that will be considered when they write the permit for dam removal.
So I'm assuming then that the Karuk tribe and proponents of Klamath Dam removal are supporting the issuance of this permit and a finding that taking the dams out is going to promote and protect water quality.
Absolutely. I mean, we accept and realize that, you know, these dams hold back a significant amount of sediment.
Right.
We think that the release of sediment when the dams are removed will have a short-term negative impact on the river, but because of the long-term extraordinary benefits, it'll be worth it. So we will be supporting the issuance of a 401 water quality permit to go along with the dam removal application. And we encourage others who are interested in fisheries and water quality to come out to these meetings and show their support, because I can promise you they're going to go to different communities who have very different views when it comes to dams. And so they need to make we need to make sure they hear from environmentalists and fisheries advocates that dam removal is a good thing and that this should be a permitted activity.
So what are the details on that hearing? Where is it going to be? What time?
So there will be three what they call are scoping meetings. And so to issue a 401 water quality permit, the Water Board has to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. And so this is the scoping meetings that meets the CEQA requirements. And there will be one on January 10th at 5 o'clock in Yreka. There'll be one January 12th at 5 o'clock in Arcata, and that'll be at the D Street Neighborhood Center. And then they'll host one on January 20th down in Sacramento at the Cal EPA building.
So again, the Arcata meeting is January 12th, 5 p.m. at the D Street Neighborhood Center.
Yes.
And the one the previous night, or January 10th, is in Yreka, not Eureka.
That's correct.
Right. Not our neighborhood, exactly. But just as an aside, you mentioned the water quality concerns associated with having sediment released from behind a dam mm-hmm. once it's removed.
Mm-hmm.
We have now a few examples of successful dam removal projects.
Condit Dam.
The Condit Dam that was removed from the White Salmon River in Washington, and of course the Elwha dams that were removed from in the Olympic National Park. What do we know from those experiments about how that sediment flow happens?
Well, it's remarkable, and I would say two things, is modelers are able to pretty accurately, based on particle size and volume of sediment in the flow of a river, to predict behavior of sediment being released. So we feel confident that we know what's going to happen. And the other thing I would say is the response of the fish and of the river ecosystem has exceeded expectations. I mean, the year after they removed those dams, you've got fish spawning above the dams. And so there's no reason.
That's way ahead of schedule.
It's way ahead of schedule. So we have very big expectations. And I think a lot of the environmental analysis that's been done on the Klamath has been very conservative. You know, we didn't want to oversell it. But I can say that from those previous examples, the fish often exceed expectations.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the EcoNews Report. My name's Scott Greeson. I'm the director of the Friends of the Eel River, and I'm here today with Craig Tucker, who's the Natural Resources Policy Advocate for the Cuyahoga Tribe, and we're talking about dam removal on the Klamath and other rivers. So, Craig, you've already talked a little bit about how our hopes for dam removal on the Klamath, on the Snake River, on the Eel River, are now in a bit of a shadow with this incoming administration and in some ways the continuance of an extremely conservative Republican Congress. Given what we know about the new administration and the new Congress, not much and quite a bit, respectively, what does it look like to you? You know, what are we going to be dealing with Paul Ryan's House of Representatives and Donald Trump's White House?
Well, I think the question we'll have is, are they really going to be pro-business? And I think what's unique about the situation, in some ways unique about the situation on the Klamath, is the dam owner is part of the dam removal process here. Pacific Corps is a willing participant in dam removal.
They want them out.
They want them out.
Right.
And so I think it would be very difficult for Congress or the Trump administration, which has sold itself on its merits as being pro-business and successful at business, are they really going to force a private business company to retain an asset that they would like to get rid of? So we think all these dams have to stand on their own merits, and one reason why the Klamath dams will be removed is they just don't make economic sense for anybody anymore. The amount of electricity they make does not pay for their upkeep anymore. They're old, they're inefficient, and they're functioning in a system that has all of these rules and regulations because of endangered species. So, you know, I think it's pretty simple, and the opposition to removing dams on the Klamath is really this, you know, ideological opposition that I argue stems some of the mythology of the Old West, that, you know, God's commandment to go forth and conquer the wilderness means to build infrastructure like dams. But these dams provide no irrigation diversions to anyone. They provide virtually no flood control for anyone. They're designed to make electricity, and the fact of the matter is they just don't do that very well. So Pacific Corps would like to get rid of them, and we've structured an arrangement. It does have some public funding in it from the state of California, which the voters agreed to in Prop 1, and it has a contribution from Pacific Corps' ratepayers, which they would have made if the dams were relicensed and they had to build fish ladders. So the economics of this is very clear. And so what we're hoping we'll get out of the Trump administration is, you know, he said he's going to be pro-business and make good decisions and make the best deals. Well, we think we've made the best deals and we're on the verge of making the Klamath great again.
Okay. What you didn't say there was much about the Congress. So I guess this is maybe a segue into a larger subject, which is how do our environmental laws fare and what's going to happen with a proposal that's been made several times now. But meanwhile, we've got a Congress which, as you've already noted, left you at the altar with a perfectly reasonable deal that they'd asked for. And which seems, if anything, even more ideological now with stronger Republican control. And it looks like we actually face real challenges, not just to specific dam removal projects, but even to the federal laws which require FERC to look at environmental impacts, and even to laws like the Endangered Species Act, which, as you noted, you know, are driving dam removal in a lot of our rivers. So, you know, I guess the question, you know, narrowly with respect to the Klamath Dam Removal Project is, how do you get through Congress's antipathy to dam removal at this point?
Well, we repackaged the dam removal agreement to really not need Congress. I mean, Congress passed a Federal Power Act decades ago and really grants the decision-making authority on decommissioning power plants to FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So we're going to do it using the process that Congress has already laid out for us. So, you know, we really don't need Congress at this point. Now, we are concerned that there are congressmen in Northern California and Southern Oregon who have publicly stated opposition to Klamath Dam removal. Could they introduce some kind of legislation that would derail this? Well, maybe. I mean, theoretically, Congress can do almost anything.
Right.
But it just, I don't know how you reconcile Republicans' support of business and their support of not forcing regulations on business while you're making PacifiCorp keep an asset that they've deemed to be a loser. I mean, these right. dams are money losers for PacifiCorp. So are Republicans really going to force them to keep them?
To hold on to a liability.
I just don't see how you square that with sort of Republicans' commitment to help business.
Well, I think we're going to return to this point if we get a chance. But let's go back to the Klamath and think about it from another angle. Because, you know, there are a lot of ways to look at the Klamath dams as irrigation projects, as in terms of their impacts on clean water or especially on fisheries. But one of the most significant parts of this process and this controversy is the assertion by the tribes, by the native peoples of this place, of both ancient knowledge and responsibility and the treaties that reflect their commitment to the place. And I guess the question for you, Craig, is what is the outpouring of support for Standing Rock and for the protection of clean water when the tribe asks for help suggest to you about struggles like the ones that the Yurok, the Hoopa, the Karuk, and their supporters are waging here?
Well, I think, you know, 2016 in a lot of ways was like this dismal year, but I think in other ways it was amazing. And I think Standing Rock is one of those examples.
Yeah.
And I think tribes have been, you know, these fights over clean water and fights against extractive industry is nothing new for any Indian tribe in America.
That's right.
But I think to a large degree, tribes have been fighting these battles, you know, alone and by themselves and singly. And I don't know how exactly the magic happened with DAPL, but I think there was this epiphany that a lot of people had that we better lock arms and fight this together. And so a lot of friends of mine, a lot of Karuk tribal members and members of the Hoopa Yurok tribe.
A lot of river people, yeah.
Been back and forth out there. I've seen them in the kitchen there in Orleans canning food and taking it with them out there. So I think it's been amazing. And I'm hoping, and I know, these folks are bringing back a lot of shared experience and a lot of lessons learned from organizing around DAPL And they're going to apply it here on the Klamath.
When you say DAPL, you mean the Dakota Access Pipeline.
The Dakota Access Pipeline. Right. So I expect that to be a huge thing. And I think Indian country is energized in a way that I've never seen. And I think folks who are unfamiliar with Indian country and are unfamiliar with Indian tribes are going to have a little bit of a lesson to learn in 2017. Because I can tell you that Native people and tribal governments are fired up. And you know, I think they're tired of putting up with, you know, Uncle Sam extracting their resources and leaving them with toxic wastelands, and they're not going to take it anymore.
We should maybe mention a little bit the extraordinary leverage that, at least in theory, the tribes possess when we're talking about dams and fisheries. And for me, this sort of lives in a box in my head called BOLT, B-O-L-D-T, after the BOLT decisions in the Pacific Northwest. But really, at its root, what we have is this legal principle that the tribes are entitled not just to fish as part of their treaty rights, but to a share of fish, a livelihood, you know, that involves fishing, and the continued existence of a culture that's built around a relationship with fish and the river or the rivers. And, you know, this is something that goes far beyond what environmental groups and, you know, river restorationists can bring to bear. But it's also something that, in my understanding, the tribes have been reluctant to use because, yeah, it's a big stick, but they're afraid that Congress could take it away or break it. Do you have a sense about how that's changing in this environment?
Well, I think tribes have built a lot of capacity in recent decades. And you got to remember, like, the Yurok tribe
was a really good
fairly recognized. Yurok Reservation and the tribe was established, I think, in 1988, Karuk in 1980. And I think the tribes have been building capacity, building expertise. And so I think some of it hasn't been, they've been, you know, afraid to enter the fray. But I think they're just now, you know, developed internal capacity to wade into these fights. And there's nothing worse than setting a bad legal precedent.
Indeed.
And so I think tribes are very cautious about wading into legal battles they can't win. And so they're very patient about that. So I think all that's true. And I think people are still learning, and I work with conservation groups very often, who really don't understand that the United States has a unique obligation to Indian tribes that they don't have to other kinds of entities. And it's an obligation to consult with tribes, and they're obligated to protect tribal trust resources, including fish. And so how you adjudicate some of these obligations can be tricky. But I think tribes are getting better and better at asserting their rights. And I think what, myself included, you know, white progressives are learning is that indigenous people and tribes are going to be the leaders of these fights to protect air and water and fish. And you just have to remember, tribes managed the Klamath Basin for 10,000 years. And yeah, they had the technology to catch every fish in the river had they wanted to. But they had a management strategy that was successful. And white people have been here for, what,
since 150?
150
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've extirpated two runs of salmon. We've got springers almost gone. We've got coho almost gone. So if you want to know how to manage the place in a way that's sustainable, Western science is certainly helpful. But you could go back to tribes and like, well, how did you guys do it before we showed up? And this traditional ecological knowledge is starting to be incorporated into management plans more and more. So I just think we white progressives need to have some humility and look for some lessons from our, you know, our brothers and sisters who are tribal members living right here in our own community who have a lot of this knowledge.
Yeah. And this part of California is really Indian country.
It really is. And yeah, I think people sometimes don't know how many Native people are living
right here.
We think that we think we own the place, but yeah, this is Indian country, and we're lucky to be in a place where we have large tribal governments. And if you look at who's leading the reintroduction of condor, it's the Yurok tribe.
Yeah.
You know, and I would argue who's leading the restoration of salmon on the Klamath River, who's spearheading the biggest dam removal in U.S. history. These are tribes that are doing this. But the tribes need all the help they can get, I can tell you that.
That's for sure. If you're just tuning in, this is the Eco News Report. I'm Scott Greeson, Director of Friends of the Eel River, and I'm talking today with Craig Tucker, Natural Resources Policy Coordinator for the Karuk Tribe. We're talking about dam removal and some of the associated questions in the new era. So thinking about what's coming with this new Congress, it's kind of terrifying, but this is our job. It seems to me we should think about a thing that didn't happen and a thing that did happen in the last Congress, and then think some more about the things that could happen. So the thing that didn't happen was that the utilities, the electric utilities bill to strip the responsibility from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, to look at environmental impacts, to consult with natural resource agencies in the states. That bill, which has been pushed pretty hard, failed, but it's going to come back. We're sure of that. Two, members of Congress, including our Democratic senator from California, just passed a bill which streamlines dam permitting in California and provides funding for new federal funding for at least two dams, the Sites and Temperance Flat reservoirs. So that looks like we're going backwards in a way. And then three, you know, it really looks like some of the more radical members of this very radical Republican Congress are already looking to repeal or gut the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Water Act, and some of the basic laws that we really depend on to call attention to the resources that these bad dams put at risk. So,
well, I think that, you know, It's been a very interesting experience for me working on dam removal here in the Klamath Basin, and we've had a strategy, we've had partners, we've had friends that didn't share our strategy, we've fought somewhat with each other over tactics, and it turns out
you and me had a little of that.
You and I had some of that, but I think we better learn how to work together.
Yeah,
you know, I think that old phrase, "You better hang together, or else we'll surely hang separately," is the case. So I do think there is going to be a push by this Congress to repeal the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah.
I do think this Congress will push to make the permitting requirements to build destructive projects, whether it be dams or, you know, mines and whatnot.
Pipelines, yeah.
Pipelines. They're going to make it easier for these things to happen. So I think, you know, there's a lot of folks who have been protesting in the street all along, but there's a few folks that haven't gotten off their couch yet. And now's the time to get off your couch. And I think now's the time that if we don't stand up and lock arms, we're going to be in big trouble. But we need to remember that our current president lost this election by nearly 3 million votes. I think only maybe 45% of the votes were for him. We need to remember that. He does not have a mandate. But I think we better learn how to organize, and we better stand up and better be loud, because if not, they will run roughshod over us. And I think being activist and making those calls to Congress, sending those letters to Congress, showing up at those rallies is more important now than it's been in a long time.
Well, before we run completely out of time, you had another kind of more hopeful story to report on, which has to do with the practice of suction dredge mining in our North Coast rivers. And this is a method of basically using an underwater vacuum cleaner to try to get at gold flakes in the bottom of a river. And it's been banned in California for a while, but now it's coming back? Or?
Yeah, well, this is an interesting topic, because I think it also is a contrast what's going on at the federal level, what we've been talking about, and the state level. So suction dredge mining, as you say, it's literally vacuuming up the bottom of a river and shoving the material through a sluice box looking for gold. And it does a couple of things. It, you know, it's not good for fish habitat, obviously. There's a lot of mercury deep in the sediments of our rivers left over from the last gold rush. Bringing that mercury out, putting it back in the water column, it becomes methylated, horrible toxin. So we've been able to, for several years, have a moratorium placed on this activity until they could come up with rules and regulations that made it safe.
Right.
A lot of this has been tied up in litigation brought forth by the mining industry,
who are sure that there's no impact at all from
this
practice.
Who actually claim, they claim that it creates fish habitat, which isn't true.
Amazing, yeah.
So part of the legislation that we were able to pass at the state level last year requires suction dredge miners to get a permit from the Water Board showing that they comply with the Clean Water Act before they can get a permit from the state of California. And so the Water Board will be having hearings on this topic, because there's a few different ways the Water Board could approach this problem. They could force everybody singly to come get a permit. They could have some blanket statewide rule to comply with, or they could decide that this is so bad for water quality, it's an activity that can't be permitted at all.
Right.
And that meeting is actually going to be in Orleans at the Karuk Natural Resources Community Building on January 24th. And so anybody...
You have a time for that?
You better check at klamathriver.org for
okay.
a time.
All right. January 24th in Orleans.
In Orleans.
At the Natural Resources Building, which is basically all the way at the east end of town.
It's in right on Highway 96, about 100 meters on the east side of the Orleans Bridge.
And the basic message you'd be asking people to deliver there is?
Well, we don't think that this is something that could be done safely. We think that they're introducing methyl mercury into our waterways. They're destroying fish habitat. It's just not a, you know, we're desperately trying to put our rivers back together. Letting a bunch of hobbyists come out and destroy them, it's just not compatible with what we're trying to do here, putting our rivers back together. And there's only about 4,000 mining permits that were issued in the last year that they were issued. And there were over 2.5 million fishing permits put out there. So, you know, what are these resources really? What are the economic benefits? What does the public really want to do to enjoy these resources? Well, it's fishing. It's not going out and vacuuming up the bottoms of our rivers. And so we encourage people to come out. You can go to the State Water Board's website. If you just Google Water Board suction dredge mining, you'll land right at the space and you'll be able to make a comment. And there's comments at the Klamath Riverkeeper website, which is klamathriver.org.
And I just want to come back to the hearing we talked about at the beginning of the show, which is the hearing on the State Water Board's scoping for Klamath Dam removal. And that's going to be at the Arcata community, the D Street Community Center on
January 12th
at 5 o'clock.
PM. Yeah. Yep. January 12th, 5 p.m., the Arcata D Street Neighborhood Center. And it's really, I mean, this is, it's one of those good meetings. We're not here to growl at the water board. The water board is wanting to grant a permit for dam removal. And we need to show up and say, yes,
And I got to say, I have been to a lot more hearings than I can remember in my life. But some of the most powerful experiences I've ever had in those kind of settings have been at Klamath Dam removal hearings. They're incredibly moving. And I strongly encourage people to come out. It's worth it in every sense.
Well, I think if we're going to, I think that 2017 can be a success, but I think we have this dam removal plan teed up perfectly, and we're not going to let Donald Trump or Republican Congress or anyone else get in our way.
Thanks for your work. This has been the Eco News Report. My name's Scott Greason. I've been your host for the past half hour. I've been speaking with Craig Tucker from the Karuk Tribe's Natural Resources Program. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again on the archived programs page of the station's website at khsu.org. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Tune in again next week at the same time for the Eco News Report.